Good morning, Connecticut, to our friends across the Sound. It's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Welcome to October, and thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to open up this morning inviting you to a fall foliage cruise to benefit a great cause, Journey Found, and we'll learn how this agency in the greater Hartford area is supporting dozens of state residents with intellectual and developmental disabilities and those on the autism spectrum. Then we'll talk about blood cancers with two renowned physicians whose organizations are among the beneficiaries of the fifth annual Pineapple Classic Obstacle 5K returning to the Greenwich Polo Club on October 8th. And if you're between the ages of 40 and 65 and concerned about losing all your hard-earned retirement savings paying for future long-term care costs, well, we're going to close the show explaining why you should make plans to attend one of two upcoming public forums being presented by Connecticut's innovative, first-in-the-country Partnership for Long-Term Care. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this news. We keep telling you, there's always something wild going on at Connecticut's only zoo, and beer lovers can unite at the Beardsley Zoo on October 9th from 3 to 7 p.m. for Brew at the Zoo. You can tap into your wild side and enjoy an evening of craft beers, live music, and silent auctions. Delicious food options will be available for purchase from local food trucks, and tickets are just $40 in advance and $50 at the gate if available. Get them in advance and don't miss the highlight of Columbus Day weekend. If you'd like details on this and the many other interesting and entertaining programs on tap at the zoo, call 203-394-6565 or visit beardsleyzoo.org. Well, I was just reminded before we hit the button that Tracy Walker was indeed a guest on the award-winning For the People just last year, and I'm glad that we can touch base and have her back to devote an entire segment to Journey Found, which is serving adults in Connecticut with intellectual disabilities, pervasive development disorder, or PDD, and autism spectrum concerns, including individuals with co-occurring challenges like mental health diagnoses. They serve adults with these intellectual and developmental disabilities throughout northern, central, and southeastern Connecticut. Their CEO is Tracy Walker, and she's on the line with me now to not only talk about some of the exciting new things that are going on with her agency, but how the role they're playing with some historic action at the state level, converting and transitioning a lot of state facilities that were formerly supporting individuals throughout Connecticut to private and nonprofit providers. We also want to remind you that coming up on October 15th is their annual fundraising gala, and they will not stick you in a stuffy banquet hall. No, they will take you aboard the Fall Foliage Lady Catherine cruise boat for this event, and we'll be telling you more about that as well, and hope you come out to Haddam to attend that fantastic event on October 15th. That being said, Tracy, thanks for coming back on the program, and glad to have you back.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So as we've been talking over the past 4 to 6 weeks about this new development of shifting a lot of state services for individuals in your realm of care from state facilities to private nonprofit partners, your agency, Journey Found, is part of this.
Yes, absolutely. In the last request for proposals, we stepped up to the plate and applied to take over a program with six gentlemen living here in Manchester, and our bid was accepted. And so now the six men living in two different apartments right next door to each other are receiving services through Journey Found rather than through the state of Connecticut. And so far, it's been a great experience.
So we've talked to a lot of other guests about this, but it bears reiterating from the front lines that you are on, the cost issues and the quality of care that will transition and perhaps, I guess, even improve for the taxpayer dollar that will now also go much further.
Correct. It's definitely more cost effective, and it has a budgetary measure that the state really has to take at this point of time. They've delayed, as long as they could, and the state budget crisis has really pushed this. But the nonprofit sector has been advocating for privatization for years. Individual nonprofits are smaller, more locally focused, more person-centered, and even though we have, of course, our own organizational hierarchies, it's nothing like having to wade through the quagmire that's the state of Connecticut. So it just makes sense to have people served more locally and more efficiently.
But at the same time, the amount of money that was being funneled into the state-based resources for these individuals is nowhere near the amount, apparently, that is going to be allocated as this shift is completed over the next months and years.
That's correct, and it varies program to program, group home to group home, whether or not the money is adequate or not to do these programs. We were fortunate enough to, out of the over 30 now that have been offered, to find one that we could afford to do, but there were many that we, in this next go-around, that we're having to pass by because the money just isn't there to do it.
Mm. So was from your understanding and to the extent you could talk about it, was the philosophy that, well, you've been saying you could do equal or better work for less money, so here's the work and here's less money, and then it falls upon benefactors of Journey Found and like agencies, nonprofits across the state, to make up whatever difference might occur. And I say that with a concern for, as we also talked briefly about before we turned on the microphone, this kind of greatly expanding number of individuals that will be needing these services in the coming few decades.
I think it's much more simple than that. I think the decisions get made forced totally on budget numbers and needing to reach a budget target and get backed into that without really looking at true cost of care and the fact that nonprofit providers have been significantly underfunded for years. So you're already asking, you know, people who have been doing with less to do even more with less. And there certainly could still be substantial savings to the state while still paying us the true cost of care. But I really think it was as simple as we need to meet these numbers and back into a process that meets those numbers.
Do you have hope or a inclination that as this transition shakes out over the coming years, you'll be able to appeal to lawmakers to accommodate nonprofit agencies at the level of true funding that's required?
Amongst the nonprofit sector, there's a healthy amount of skepticism, I think. But however, as more and more of these services are provided in the private sector by nonprofits, then our voices then become stronger. Hmm. So taking on these programs for those people that can do it without causing significant risk and fraying the infrastructure of the agencies taking the programs, as many of those that can do that, it does help build our case and make us stronger to then go back and say, okay, now fund a level of care that can continue or even improve the quality of what's going on for the, for these people. Yeah. I also think that the responses to these various requests for proposals also help make the case, because it remains to be seen if they're going to have takers for all of these programs.
And it's important to say that that Tracy is not speaking for the statewide network of nonprofits. This is just conversation, you know, based on her opinion solely. So or interactions that she's having. So we don't want anybody to be thinking that you're the spokesperson for the network.
Right, absolutely.
But you do offer that frontline perspective, and I have to think that it's not going to take long to gather those outcomes and evidence in order to at least prove to lawmakers that more funding is going to be required, with the caveat that the state is still saving a massive amount of money with this shift.
Correct, absolutely correct. And it seems a bit short-sighted to think that, particularly for people like Journey Found that provides homes, creates homes for people, why we should be any less susceptible to the cost of living increases that we all have in our own families and our own homes. We're not outside of that. So that, that alone speaks to the need for some new money into the system.
Great. Well, that being said, if folks are just tuning in, we want to remind them that we're talking with Tracy Walker. She's executive at Journey Found. They currently support in excess of 70 people, between 70 and 80 people throughout North Central, Northeastern, and Southeastern Connecticut. And like many nonprofits across the state and the country, Journey Found faces challenges with funding. And they will try to make funding their agency as much fun and as enjoyable as possible by bringing all takers up to capacity aboard the Lady Catherine cruise boat for their second gala fall foliage cruise on Saturday, October 15th. The boarding time is 4 p.m. at Eagles Landing State Park in Haddam. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that you'll enjoy by attending and filling this cruise to capacity. Journeyfound.org is the place you can learn more about all of the subject matter we're discussing on the program this morning, and to link to get tickets while you can, while they last, for this second annual gala aboard the Lady Catherine cruise boat. You can also call 860-643-9844 for more information about the agency or to buy your tickets. So, Tracy, that being said, we talked about the new individuals that you've now taken on through the process of conversion from state to nonprofit care. But also, you've got some exciting new programs in the works that we'll hope to roll out in the coming weeks and months. So let's talk a little bit about those.
Sure. We are working on developing a new home for three young men with autism and other disorders, coming out just finishing high school or getting ready to finish high school, coming from home into their first time living away from parents. It's really exciting because not only is the traditional Department of Developmental Services involved, but also we are working on taking a young man that his local school system is going to be providing the funding, and this will be the second time that we've done that. So spreading our wings a little bit on funding source, and then we recently took a young woman on an emergency basis that we've been staffing currently in a state apartment, and we're going to be moving her next month into her own apartment, and in a few months looking for matching her with a suitable housemate so that she will be out in her own place with staff support instead of in and out of hospitals, actually. So that's really exciting. And then the third thing that we're working with our board is exploring ways in which we can provide services to young adults with autism who otherwise may not have a funding stream attached to them. They're not, a client of the Department of Developmental Services or Mental Health and Addiction Services or any of the other various state agencies that fund services, but they graduated from school with nothing to go to, and they have families that want supports and services who just can't access them. So we're exploring a variety of opportunities that it's too soon to really get into details about, but that is a focus for us. Young adults with autism, ages basically 20 to 35 in there, so their first away from home experience.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I am too frequently involved in conversations with parents, particularly single parents of children of that age on the autism spectrum, that are going to hit adulthood or are just into the, just passed from, 17 to 18 or 20 to 21. And there's just such, even with families that have resources at the ready, there is that kind of tightrope walk where the young individual is aware enough and advanced enough, high functioning enough to be completely aware of the legal ramifications of the independence they are now blessed with, yet still would be quite challenged to live completely independently.
Absolutely, and there's a few areas that currently in the industry, and that we're looking at. Much better technology out there to help reduce the number of paid relationships these people have to have. Because, most of the time, what happens is, you hire staff to work with these people, and while that's a very necessary piece, no one wants to have all of their closest relationships be people they pay to have those relationships with them. So the use of technology can free them from having to have, a staff support with them all of the time. We also look at helping them utilize and develop their natural supports that exist. So, they don't grow up in bubbles. They grow up in families. So they have relatives. They have friends. And so making use of that and providing the supports necessary, but doing that in a way that is the least intrusive to the independence each person is capable of, which is also a philosophy that we try very hard to follow in our residential programs that we currently operate.
Well, so you certainly have the track record and the wherewithal to make it happen at Journey Found, Tracy, and I'm so glad to hear about the fact that you're taking on more responsibility that may not necessarily be attached to the funding that it warrants, but you're still, working hard, and your benefactors and supporters and staff are all still working hard to expand and enhance programming, all with the help of individuals who may be with you aboard the Lady Catherine cruise boat. So in the last couple minutes that we have, if you wouldn't mind just getting into a couple of the key details people may want to know about the cruise coming up on October 15th. And we will bid you farewell for now.
Okay, great. Yeah, on October 15th, the Lady Catherine provides us a wonderful venue to take a brief fall foliage river cruise. It's a dinner dance. It's a buffet dinner. It's a band, which I love to let everybody know. The leader of the band is the brother of one of the men that lives in one of our group homes. So it keeps that family involvement, which is terrific. We have a silent auction on board. We can take up to 200 people, so it's a limited venue. But tickets are $125 a person. We're still selling tickets. We're still looking for sponsors for the event if people are interested, and certainly donations for our silent auction. But this is our main chance every year to our big fundraiser to have non-state funds that can help us really support people making their own choices and having ridiculously happy lives, because that's really what we're all about. And state money doesn't always pay for happiness.
Yeah, and truly what we all deserve, no matter what. 860-643-9844 is the number to call if you want to order tickets or get more information on the gala or any of the work that Journey Found is doing. If you'd like to make an independent donation without attending the gala, I am sure that they would be happy to hear that. JourneyFound.org is the website. This nonprofit based out of Manchester provides behavioral, residential, and other support services to individuals in Connecticut with pervasive development disorders and other intellectual disabilities. Their executive is Tracy Walker, and she's been kind enough to spend some time visiting with us this morning. We hope you'll come out to the gala. It's October 15th. Enjoy the fall foliage on the Lady Catherine cruise boat and benefit this good cause. Tracy, thank you so much for being on the program. Well, as we hit the midpoint of the program today, we're going to, as we have been in recent weeks, talking about some incredible events that are coming up in the near future to benefit really important causes, the least of which is the fifth annual Pineapple Classic Obstacle 5K, which is coming to the Greenwich Polo Club on October 8th. And we wanted to bring the event founder, Kevin Cameron, on the show because this has such appeal and potential impact to everyone throughout Connecticut that we wanted to make sure we did a little bit more than just make announcements for this event. Kevin is on the line with us. He's former CEO of HLTH Corporation, a parent company of WebMD, as well as MDON Business Services and MDM Practice Services and other healthcare companies. Kevin, we've talked a little bit before we brought you on the line, and you are also a blood cancer survivor, correct?
That's right.
So the whole impetus for the Pineapple Classic comes from your experiences?
Yeah. Leukemia has unfortunately become kind of a lifestyle for me. I first got leukemia in 2002 and had a bone marrow transplant, and then I fell into a category where I had something called graft versus host disease, which is a downstream problem associated with bone marrow transplants and leukemia, and then ongoing cancers and problems, you know, to this day. And so I've, my life has been very much about that over that period of time, and really my family's. I have a daughter, Nell, who was 2 years old, and a daughter, Jane, who was 6 months old when this all started. Mm. And they've spent their entire lives with cancer as kind of a norm. And so the wonderful thing is that I'm still here,
yeah,
and walking, but I'm also sort of a walking demonstration of how inadequate the current standards of care are for cancer and how much further we need to go.
Well, going toward the effort of getting that unwanted guest out of your house and the households of the tens of thousands of people that are impacted by blood cancers, particularly advancing ones, you have established the Pineapple Classic Foundation. Your fifth annual Pineapple Classic is coming up, as we said, on October 8th at the Greenwich Polo Club. PineappleClassic.com is the website to go if you want to learn more than we may have time to talk with Kevin about this morning, because he has arranged for us to talk to two incredible, history-making medical professionals, one who's tied with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and the other tied to City of Hope's Hematological Malignancy and Stem Cell Transplantation Institute in California. These are two of the three beneficiaries of this year's Pineapple Classic. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about why the pineapple theme. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, we originally started this with the Leukemia Society, and they came, looking for support. And but my view was that, you know, we should try to create that I, rather than just write a check, that I'd like to try to create something that could be more of a long-term source of support, and that would get money directly to the mission. And so what we do at the Pineapple Classic Foundation is we support the Leukemia Society, but we're supporting specific personalized research in the blood cancer arena. At City of Hope, we're sponsoring their research at the institute you just mentioned. Mm. And the third one is Educating Haiti, where we're building a school in Haiti partially in honor of Elizabeth Ben, who's a teacher here in Old Greenwich who died in 2013 after a long battle with leukemia. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the wonderful thing about our event is, you asked about pineapple. We wanted to do something fun. We wanted to do something that's about the family. We wanted to, that is a lot of what cancer takes away.
Right.
It takes away the fun in life. It takes away your ability to do things. It alters things. It alters, you know, my children know me, and it's great, but they don't know the same person that they might have known.
Right.
And so we wanted to make this fun, and that's the Pineapple Classic. You run. We have obstacles. You carry a pineapple. You wear costumes. You compete in teams, and at the end we have a big luau with food and. Yeah, drinks and ice cream and the whole thing.
Yeah, the great thing is folks can run or they can walk or they can just come for the party. But the best part is all of the proceeds go to benefit these three important causes. We're going to remind folks again, pineappleclassic.com is the website to go to learn all you need to know, not only about the event, but about the beneficiaries and how to register. We're going to put Kevin on hold while we make a couple of calls to two of his key partners, medical professionals and esteemed researchers, and then we'll come back for a final shout out on this event. So, Kevin, if you don't mind holding, we will move on and call our first medical partner. So we're on the line now with Dr. Lee Greenberger, and he is here to talk about their longstanding relationship and partnership with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and their work with AML Precision Medicine. Doctor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to join you.
So just a little background on the history of your work in conjunction with the funding and support through the LNL Society.
Right. So the Leukemia Lymphoma Society has been, our mission is to fund cures for blood cancer, mm-hmm. for all blood cancers, leukemia, lymphoma, and myeloma. Mm-hmm. Society was formed in 1949, and we've been doing this now for 67 years, to attempt to get cures, which we've been able to do for some blood cancers, cures for all blood cancers. That's the overall mission. We have a focus on acute myelogenous leukemia because we recognize that that is there's a number of patients who have this, and it's actually quite a deadly disease that high unmet medical need that needs treatment, new treatments.
And could you, you know, to the extent that you can translate to the layman and general listeners who are on board with us this morning, the difference between that sort of aggressive condition versus some of the other blood cancers that you've either developed some therapies or even cures for?
Right. So the blood cancers, there are many different types of blood cancers, and in fact, as we go towards this precision medicine and understand essentially the wiring diagrams for all these different blood cancers, they're all distinct. And it's actually a collection of hundreds of different cancer types. AML, or acute myelogenous leukemia, is one type, and it is an aggressive form. That means when you get it, it requires almost immediate treatment. And it will progress very quickly if you don't treat it, cannot control it. There are other types of cancers, blood cancers, that are what we call indolent, sleepy, if you will, that they take years to progress. So there's a variety of different speeds of progression and a variety of different molecular mechanisms that drive these cancers.
Go ahead.
I wanted to just touch on, in terms of cures for cancers, LLS, Leukemia Lymphoma Society, has been, we know we can do this because we've done it for acute lymphoblastic leukemia for children and for Hodgkin's lymphoma. The therapy development started in the 40s and 50s and has progressed to these days that we can basically get cures for 90% of these patients. We are cures, basically disease gone.
Yes.
There is chronic myeloid leukemia, CML, where you can take a pill for the rest of your life, and you can control the disease. You have to take the pill indefinitely, but you control the disease. So that's a little bit different than a cure where the disease is gone. Long-term control is another objective. Now, for AML, a disease that is aggressive, that requires immediate therapy, we have some therapies, and some patients actually do get cures, not many. And many of the patients who get AML are older and cannot take the aggressive therapies that, for example, are used for other leukemias, cannot use these therapies. And beyond that, cannot get to what we call a bone marrow transplant, which I'll tell you in a second. But if you can, and the transplants are, tend to, if you can tolerate the transplant and it works, can be curative. What a bone marrow transplant is simply, as I like to describe to computer folks, it's a reset. It's like hitting the reset button. You wipe out all the cells in the bone marrow, and you reinstall good cells, the non-cancer cells, to restart the system.
Dr. Greenberger, we're going to take a quick break and come back in and pick up on this conversation with you in just a few minutes. Folks, stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click onto Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Norwalk Hospital is offering a free smoking cessation program beginning Thursday, October 20th. This program consists of just 5 weekly sessions in the evening beginning at 6 p.m. at the hospital's section of pulmonary medicine, which offers the smoking cessation programs twice a year free of charge as a community service. The program provides a general knowledge related to smoking, a plan of action to stop, and social support toward your effort to quit. However, registration is requested. So if you'd like to register or get more information about the program, you can call 203-852-2476. That's 203-852-2476. We're back and picking up our conversation with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. Lee Greenberger. In terms of this particular type of speedy and aggressive cancer, are you finding that it is presenting in many of your patients early enough so that intervention can be successful, or is this something that shows up collateral to other types of testing, and in many cases it's advanced too far or quite far?
Well, so when patients come in, they might complain of being tired, they may have infections, and so they'll fever, and they'll come in with general symptoms. But when you look in the blood, you can clearly see that there is a high percentage of these cancer cells that have to be treated. And because they will grow very quickly, it requires treatment pretty much right away. Some of these patients, particularly if you're under 60 and you could tolerate the chemotherapy and get to a bone marrow transplant, you can actually control the disease and get rid of it. However, many of the patients wind up being over 60 years old and cannot tolerate these aggressive therapies. And that's where the heart of the problem is, that even if you're younger, you may not respond to therapy. So this concept of developing resistance is a big deal. And then for those patients who can get to a transplant, the transplant is not without its side effects also, that you can develop some pretty serious side effects, whether that be intestinal or skin or otherwise, that can compromise the body. And the transplants can fail as well.
Yeah.
These patients all of them do require immediate attention.
Very good. Dr. Greenberger is the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's, you're still Chief Scientific Officer, right, sir?
That's correct.
Yes, yep. And guiding the society's efforts to translate research into clinical trials that ultimately pave the way for new therapies to treat blood cancers, as we've been hearing about today. Dr. Greenberger, just a great pleasure to have a few minutes with you to bring us up to speed on sort of, where the dollars go and what great success those dollars are achieving under your leadership. So thank you.
Right. Well, thank you so much. And I just wanted to add, LLS has spent over a billion dollars in research, and we are very proud of the progress that we've made in blood cancer and are our real focus right now and effort in AML. We're very excited to use precision medicine and the progress moving forward.
Well, I would take that one step further, too, just to remind folks listening that the $1 billion plus that's been spent in terms of the cost to the American public for caring for individuals that might not otherwise get these therapies or be availed to these therapies and cures would likely be in the hundreds of billions.
These are very expensive therapies. They're loss of life. There's loss of quality of life. So the impact is far beyond simply just getting the disease.
Very good. Thank you, doctor. Our next guest is Dr. Stephen Foreman. He runs the Hematologic Malignancies and Stem Cell Transplantation Institute at City of Hope. And as we talked with Kevin about, the Pineapple Classic Foundation is supporting their research. Dr. Foreman, great pleasure. Thank you for taking my call. Listeners should probably know that as we're making this call to you, you're in Southern California, and we appreciate you taking some time out of your overstuffed day to just to tell us a little bit about the great work and advances that you're enjoying at City of Hope. Tell us about the cause.
Well, the cause is really to help support the research that we do here at City of Hope that affects not just our own patients, but patients throughout the country, and trying to develop new therapies for the diseases of the blood and immune system, which is predominantly diseases like leukemia and lymphoma and multiple myeloma. And we have a long track record of developing these new therapies that are hopefully both more effective and safer for people.
We had the opportunity to talk with Dr. Greenberger as well, and he was articulating the kind of rapid advancements that have been happening in certain areas, while other areas, particularly with AML, there's still a distance to go.
And that is correct. I think as I think back on the research that's been going on for a long time, there's some diseases for which there's been a lot of progress and a lot of newly developing therapies, and others it's been slower. The clues have come from really interrogating individual person's cancer or leukemia and trying to figure out if there are specific lesions, if you will, that might provide a target for therapy, both utilizing small molecules and immune-based therapies, which is how things are evolving now for really all cancers.
Mm-hmm. And what is on the current agenda, and where is City of Hope and the research that you're doing going to hopefully affect better outcomes in the near future?
So a lot of our research we've been doing over the last 10 years in particular has been on basically engineering a person's immune system to better recognize and eliminate the cancer in their own body. Some of this is by connecting antibodies to drugs. Some of this is by designing new T cells that can recognize the cancer. Often from the person's own body, where the cells are removed, engineered, and put back in. And for certain types of diseases, we've seen some pretty dramatic responses, and now we're trying to extend that to diseases like AML, too. In addition, there are drugs that have been developed now that liberate a person's immune system to better respond against the cancer in the same way it responds against the flu. And when we see things like that happening, it gives us hope that we can augment that effect and make it more effective and cover a lot more diseases than just leukemia.
So some of these people that have been with you for a decade or more kind of stand with you as pioneers. But I also imagine that they, those who are still surviving, are quite important from a data standpoint.
So I think my perspective for a long time has been that we partner with a patient to take care of them first and foremost.
Right, right.
And to try to bring our best ideas to the bedside for them. And so a lot of people will come to us because they really would like to get what we think will be tomorrow's therapies, but get them today. So that's why it's important that the trials that we do are well thought out, you know, well conceived, well planned, and safely administered, because we know that the patient is taking a risk going into somewhat of the unknown, because we don't know the answer often on clinical trials. But it's the only way we've been able to make the progress that we have been doing, and so they are very important, and we, you know, we are both grateful and respectful of them, but it is definitely a partnership.
Mm. As you're interacting with colleagues around the globe toward this effort at City of Hope, what are a couple of the most exciting things that you now can actually see on the horizon in terms of developments?
I think in this phase of, if you will, medical science, I think there are two areas. The first and one that we're working the hardest on here is in really understanding all the different ways that the immune system can contribute to helping push the cancer both into remission and make it go away completely. And we've seen dramatic things, particularly over the last 5 years, that we just never saw before. And it always makes me lament the apparent slowness of the process, because you know there are people you took care of before who, had you known then what you know now, would be better treated. And in some ways, their contribution has been to the people who are now going to come to us, and hopefully we can do a better job for them. But that's on the immunologic side. The other side is really to understand on an individual patient's basis the nature of her or his particular cancer, and either utilize or design drugs that will target susceptible genes in that person's. You hear a lot about personalized medicine. What that refers to is understanding that person's lung cancer, that person's leukemia. Although they share things in common, sometimes they are different enough to where individualized therapy will be important for them.
Yeah. Well, in on this program and in my world, I'm blessed to talk to a lot of professionals, particularly researchers, and they it all comes back to the exponential increases or enhancements in genetic science.
So even the immune-based therapy is based on an understanding of the genes that are involved in the cancer cell as well as the body's response to that cancer. And I think a lot of what we learned about how to manipulate the immune system was based on an understanding of the molecular biology, both of the cancer itself as well as the body's response to it, and then to tweak it, take advantage of it, modify it, and that's the path we're on right now.
Right. Well, it's very exciting to hear from the front lines what's happening with City of Hope and your work. Dr. Stephen Forman runs the Hematologic Malignancies and Stem Cell Transplantation Institute at City of Hope on the West Coast, and took some time to speak with us this morning. The City of Hope, one of the beneficiaries of the upcoming 5th Annual Pineapple Classic Obstacle Run that we are talking with Kevin about. So, Doctor, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for taking time this morning. We're back with Kevin Cameron, and after two really, really exciting conversations with Dr. Greenberger and Dr. Forman, who are both pioneering, as you could hear, not only cures, but cutting-edge genetic work and tests toward helping folks like Kevin to beat his blood cancer and hopefully defeat all blood cancers in our lifetime. In the last minute that we have with you, Kevin, just a final shout out for the 5th Annual Pineapple Classic Obstacle 5K.
Well, we'd just love all of you to come October 8th. If you live anywhere near Greenwich, make the trip. It's at the Greenwich Polo Club, which is an unbelievably beautiful setting. And we'll have racers, we'll have walkers, we'll have families, and we'll have a luau. And it's all for some pretty just phenomenal institutions, a couple of which you've just heard about.
And I would challenge anybody within the sound of our voices, no matter where you are, and we're talking to you folks out on Long Island as well, come on over. If you know someone whose life has been touched or lost to blood cancer, this is a really important event, as you've heard from our researchers. So, Kevin, once again, best of luck to you, my friend, and thank you so much for the great work you're doing and the innovative event that you've dreamed up here that's going to have sustaining value to all of this important research, as well as to building this school in Haiti. PineappleClassic.com is what you need to know. We hope you come out to the Greenwich Polo Club on October 8th for this great event. Kevin, thanks for being on the program. Regular listeners to the program will recall our relationship with our guest to close out the program this morning, David Gutchen, and the Partnership for Long-Term Care, an innovative initiative here in Connecticut, because both David and the state and I believe in the need for an affordable type of initiative that can protect individuals who may face long-term care needs in the future. And as such, we not only use our stations to remind folks about orientation events for the partnership, but also to occasionally bring David on to touch base on developments and to review and remind folks about why this is so important. David, welcome to the program once again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So first and foremost, we want to tell people to get out their calendars, because there are a couple of these orientation public forums coming up. The first one on October 20th in Easton at their Easton Public Library, and another one on November 1st at the Wilson Branch Public Library in New Haven. So we'll be reminding you of those two events coming up. But let's go to our guest to kind of give us a little bit of a boilerplate on what the partnership is and why it is so important to the future of Connecticut residents. David.
Well, the Connecticut Partnership for Long-Term Care was the first program of its kind in the country, which has actually spread to 43 other states. And it's a partnership between state government, who I work for, and the private insurance industry, that was developed to help Connecticut residents plan for their future long-term care needs. And when we talk about long-term care, we're talking about nursing home care, assisted living, and home care. We're not talking about health care. We're not talking about acute care. Long-term care is the type of care that people need for an extended period of time to manage rather than cure a condition. And there are two problems with long-term care from a financial standpoint. The first is, in Connecticut, it's very expensive. And Connecticut has the dubious honor of being the second most expensive state to receive nursing home care at around $150,000 a year. Coupled with that is the fact that traditional health insurance and Medicare, which is acute care health insurance, do not pay for long-term care. And so if you are counting on your health insurance or Medicare to pick up the cost when you got to a point where you needed help with bathing or dressing, sort of personal care, which is long-term care, then you're going to find yourself falling short. And so the type of policy that the partnership has developed in conjunction with the private insurers is called private long-term care insurance, which is a resource to help people pay specifically for those long-term care services.
So the partnership is a facilitator to bring the consumer to the variety of policy coverage, not the purveyor of that coverage.
Right. The state doesn't actually sell the insurance coverage. We approve the policies for sale. And then our main role is education, which is what these forums that you mentioned coming up are. Mm. And we've developed standards for these partnership policies that are designed to provide as many quality measures as possible, so people are buying a high-quality product when they buy a partnership plan. Mm. We've also just recently changed one of our requirements around inflation protection to try and make the policies even more affordable for individuals. And if people come out to the forum, they'll get more details on all that.
Mm. Is there some sort of central or common average cost that you quote to individuals in these forums as an idea for budgeting purposes, or do they really run the gamut and are specific to each policy?
Yeah, we don't get into specifics about the premiums because they really do vary. One of the main factors is the person's age when they buy the plan. So the younger you are, the less expensive it will be. So the earlier you start planning, the more advantageous it will be. But the premiums also vary by company, by level of benefits. So it's hard to give people sort of an average range because the amount of coverage that people will buy will vary based on the amount of assets that they want to protect. Because included in partnership policies and not available in any other types of policies is a feature called Medicaid Asset Protection, which allows individuals who use these partnership plans to protect their assets above and beyond normal Medicaid rules if they end up needing long-term care after their insurance runs out. And that's important because Medicaid is the only government program that pays for long-term care, but the problem is Medicaid is for poor people. So in the state of Connecticut, you have to spend down all of your assets to no more than $1,600 to be eligible. The partnership will allow you to keep an additional amount of assets based on what the insurance policy has paid on your behalf. So if you wanted to protect $200,000, you're looking to buy a plan that would pay $200,000. So you tailor it to your specific needs. And again, the forums will go into much more detail as to exactly how these features work.
I imagine virtually anyone at any age with the financial wherewithal and the right partnership can obtain some sort of long-term care coverage. But on the opposite end, is there an age that is too young or a target age range where an individual really should start considering possibly investing in long-term care through the partnership because, as you mentioned, they would enjoy a measurable financial advantage of the cost of the premiums?
I don't think it's ever too early to start planning for this, but the reality is that people should really start to look at long-term care when they start to do their retirement planning. So that might be in your 40s or early 50s, hopefully earlier than that, because if you're trying to build up a nice, comfortable retirement nest egg, you need to insure against the risk for long-term care. Otherwise, that nest egg could disappear quite quickly if you end up needing the care. So we encourage people to start looking at as soon as possible because, again, the premiums will be less expensive the earlier you buy the plan.
And how, if you can even answer this, how does the partnership or the plans deal with people who's say they do have the wherewithal to begin going through the partnership to obtain a care plan at 40, and then when they're in their 50s, their financial situation changes much for the better, an inheritance, a huge promotion, a new job, won the lotto, what have you, and they suddenly find themselves with a lot more assets to protect than when they first took on the plan. Can folks sort of change horses in the middle of the river, or at least put a new saddle on that horse to accommodate changes in their own financial situation as they age into the realm where these plans might have to be tapped?
That's a good question. So as you get older, if you wanted more coverage, you could apply for it. The problem is that the additional amount will be based on your new age. So if you bought in your 40s and now you want to buy additional amounts in your 50s, it may be something that's feasible for you, but it may be a lot more expensive than when you originally bought the plan in your 40s. But certainly people could look at adding additional coverage if that's something they want to do.
That being said, is there some sort of tool or means by which the youngest Connecticut partnership policy buyers might be able to use to, you know, give them some idea of maximizing their investment since they are entering the realm of this program so young?
Well, again, if they do it in conjunction with looking into the future for their own financial assets, then they could mirror that sort of planning. So depending on what their projections are or what their hope is for their assets, they could tailor their plan around that. The other advantage of buying at a younger age is that these policies inflate on a compounded basis each year. So the benefit is going up and up. And the younger you buy the policy, the more years that policy has to grow on a compounded basis. So just like when you invest money, the earlier you do it, the better you're going to be in the long run.
But there may be some logic toward aiming high in terms of the amount of assets that one might want to protect under one of these policies?
Yeah, at a young age, you'd have a lot more options in terms of how much you could afford to buy. So you may be able to buy a lot more at a younger age because the premium would be less.
I see. Very good. Well, in the last couple minutes that we have with you, David, let's go back to getting people a lot more information than they could get in our few minutes together. The Partnership for Long-Term Care is holding a couple of forums. These are the last two for the year, David?
Yeah, this is the last two for the calendar year. We'll have more in the spring next year.
Very good. So the next forum on October 20th is at the Easton Public Library, probably 5 minutes off of the Merritt Parkway, just south of Bridgeport. If you're not familiar with Easton, and of course, I hope everyone listening knows where New Haven is, the November 1st forum coming up at the Wilson Branch Public Library on Washington Avenue, that's on November 1st. And these forums all open at 6. Registration for the forums begin at 5:30. So walk-ins are welcome. However, David, you like to see folks registering in advance to attend?
Yeah, well, we encourage people to do that because we tend to get large crowds there. And they can register two ways. They can call our 800 number, which is 800-547-3443. That's, again, 800-547-3443. Or they can visit our website at ctpartnership.org. That's ctpartnership, all one word, .org, and you can register right online. And as you mentioned, the registration starts at 5:30. The program goes from 6 to 8. There'll be a slide presentation, and then there'll be plenty of time for any questions that folks have.
Excellent. Connecticut residents can gain unbiased information about the need for long-term care, the ability to find and purchase quality, affordable long-term care insurance, and a way to get needed care without depleting their assets. All those answers will be provided at the forums, and we hope folks can attend. David Gutchen has been kind to spend time with us on occasion, updating us and reminding us about this innovative program, the first of its kind in the country, and now available practically nationwide, thanks to Connecticut's innovative pioneering of the partnership. David, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noelle Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.